Micah, a prophet, he tells us right up front, he's Micah of Moresheth, and as far as I can tell by reading and the studying I've got it, Moresheth Gath is the town he was from, about 20, 25 miles, got a question mark on this map down here from it, but from Jerusalem up here, it's about 20, 25 miles southwest of Jerusalem. So he was from the farmland. Amos was a farmer, more or less, for his background. Isaiah was a person of the aristocracy, if you will. He lived in the town. He was in the rulership and leadership. So some of the prophets have different backgrounds, where they come from. God picked people who were sensitive to him or willing to have him live in them and use them, and he took them around where they went. And you'll see in some of the things that Micah says that his concern for the people, for the little folks and stuff, if you will, shows up in his lessons and stuff, what God says through him. And we'll come back into here, all these other towns out here, we'll hear those in the end of chapter 1. Micah was a contemporary of Hosea, Amos, and Isaiah. He speaks mainly to the southern kingdom in most of his words, but he does have words in there about Israel as well. So he's speaking to Israel and Judah about their lifestyles and what their ways of life are doing related to God's decisions and God's ways that he expects us to live. And he wants them to pay attention to what they're doing. Some people call Micah a little Isaiah because there seems to be so much similar between some of what Isaiah says and what Micah says. Micah's only 7 chapters. That's pretty short compared to even the minor prophets. Okay? Doesn't necessarily mean what he has to say is minor, but there's just not that many chapters in here. Some of the people and stuff I read and studied on it, some people will think that chapters 1 to 3 is all that we really have that was really written by Micah, and that tell about Micah's lessons and the things that he prophesied. Now, others feel that chapters 4 to 7 are add-ons, that other people came in. You get into some really interesting things, I guess, if you will, when you start going through how people evaluate the Old Testament writings and prophets, and you got Deuteronomic things, you got Judeo-Deuteronomic kind of evaluations, and all these different people trying to evaluate by languages and by the phrases he uses and some of the stories he tells. Where does this come from and how does it work? But we know that Micah was a real engaged prophet and going, because Jeremiah 26 refers to him, and we'll read that and even paying attention. So he tells us right off that he speaks in the days of Jotham and Hezekiah and Ahaz. You know anything about those kings? Tell some of the interesting picture and how families may go even. Jotham was a king. He actually took over before his dad died, because his dad got illness, so became a leper basically. And so he had to live outside the town, right? Couldn't engage with people and stuff by the laws related to lepers. So Jotham started reigning before his dad passed away, and it continued on after his dad passed away. When Jotham's life was expired, Ahaz came. Jotham was pretty good. He was considered a positive king. Ahaz, not so good. So if his dad was good, why wasn't Ahaz good? Raise the question, right? Ahaz didn't follow the path of his dad. Ahaz took people back aside, just like the kings of Israel had gone. Brought idol worship back. Brought in the worship of Baal. Stuff like that into Judah. Not good. Behind Ahaz comes his son Hezekiah. Ahaz was terrible. Ahaz was one of the better kings Israel ever had. Okay? Again, that question. His dad wasn't so good. His dad followed idols and promoted that kind of worship in Israel, exactly opposite of what God wanted. And then here comes Hezekiah, his son, and Hezekiah turns the land back to Israel. What might make a difference? Why would that happen? Same could happen to us. Are these things here, this thing between your ears and all that stuff, is that tuned to God? Are you willing to hear what God has to say? Or are you more interested in just your own manner of thinking and, what, if you will, taking in what's accepted within your culture at the time? Seems Jotham and Hezekiah had a lot more heart, a lot more willingness to listen to what God had to say than Ahaz did. And that proved true as we went through Hosea, seeing that none of the kings of Israel were good. Every one of the kings of Israel allowed the nation to go off into idol worship, and then they added in Baal and all kinds of other things that led them astray from God. So we've got a mix of kings in Israel in the time of Micah and what he's doing, and the preaching he has, coming from a town of Moresheth-Gath. So he's calling the people back. He's calling the people to live according with God's words. I'll read some lyrics of a song again for us to think about as we get ready to go into here. Sometimes I just want to close my eyes and act like everything's all right when I know they're not. This world needs God, but it's easier to stand and watch. I could say a prayer and just move on like nothing's wrong, but I refuse. I can hear the least of these crying out so desperately, and I know we are the hands and feet of you, O God. So if you say move, it's time for me to follow through and do what I was made to do and show them who you are. Because I don't want to live like I don't care. I don't want to say another empty prayer. Oh, I refuse to sit around and wait for someone else to do what God has called me to do myself. Oh, I could choose not to move, but I refuse. To stand and watch the weary and the lost cry out for help, I refuse to turn my back and try and act like all is well. I refuse to stay unchanged, to wait another day to doubt myself. I refuse to make one more excuse, because I don't want to live like I don't care. I don't want to say another empty prayer. Oh, I refuse to sit around and wait for someone else to do what God has called me to do myself. Oh, I could choose not to move, but I refuse. I refuse. How about us? Does our world need God? Is our God walking in the right ways that they should walk? Does any of that ever weigh heavy on your heart? When was the last time you prayed for the lost living right next door to you? Or the lost that you work with? Or maybe, God, what would you have me to do with the different needs that are around the world? We just had a group came and talked to us about children and children that are in need of assistance. There's all kinds, there's thousands. Multiplied thousands of thousands of children around the world that could use help. There's people right next door to us in our town here in Sanford that are hungry. Does that ever bother me? What is it God would have me do with it? How would God have me live? Well, I think that's part of the picture you get in Micah and some of the other prophets and stuff as well with it. They have a heart for God such that they see the pains of the world and they refuse to sit back and just say, well, that's somebody else's problem. That's not mine. You know, I'm living a pretty good life. You know, I'm trying to do, you know, but I really don't want to reach out there and stick my hand into something too much, you know. That's for somebody else to take care of. Are you called of God? Micah was called to be a prophet. But like one other prophet we recognized already, we've seen, Jonah was called of God and did what? He ran the other way. He recognized God's call. He saw it very clearly. He even understood that if he went up there to Nineveh and preached, God might let them repent. Oh, never, God! Man, I can't even begin to think about what that's like. You're going to let Nineveh repent? You're kidding me. I don't want any part of that. Poof! Off he runs. We could respond the same way, right? Or we could say, God, you put me here for a purpose. What is it? Let me jump on that bandwagon and run with every ounce of energy you give me. The word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. I want to come back, should have said that earlier with the stuff. You look at those kings and go, that puts his time frame for Micah somewhere in the 750 BC to about 686 BC for his time frame. Most of the people by his writings and things he coaches the people about, if you will, tells them about things that need to change, put most of his activity was probably between 735 BC and 701 BC. So that's right about the time that, 10, 12 years before Samaria, the Israel, nation of Israel falls in 722 BC to the Assyrians. The Assyrians were the mighty kingdom at this time, in the beginning. They were still there. They came in and actually invaded Judea in 712, 711. They created a lot of havoc for Judah, but they never captured Jerusalem. Jerusalem had actually... Ahaz, the king of Judah, went up and made a bargain when he was being accosted by some other people, and he went up and made a bargain with Assyria. So Judah actually became a vassal to Assyria, paying them homage, if you will, and paying them money. About 710, 712, based, or I guess it goes backwards, 712 to 710 BC area somewhere. But Hezekiah, being a good king, one of those who prayed to God even when he was attacked, that city was never actually overtaken by the Assyrians. They would fall later in the 680s to Babylon, who came up and took over Assyria. So in that time frame, see, there's a lot of troubles. Not like Hosea was, where the economy was good, everything was generally pretty positive. This is a time of turmoil, because the Assyrians have tried, Assyrians had a purpose to overtake the entire known world at that time and rule it all, dominate everything. And Egypt, down south of Judah, was in their way because Egypt had similar aspirations. So to get to Egypt, they had to come through Judea. Might as well capture that, destroy that, those people down there while I'm on my way down to get Egypt, right? So they were in their way. It was a place of a lot of upheaval in the world around them. Hear, all you peoples, listen, O earth, and all that is in it. Let the Lord God be a witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord is coming from his place, or out of his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth. The mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will split like wax before the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. Is that an interesting theophany kind of picture? What would you think had happened? What would it look like if God left heaven and came down here? That sort of picture Micah's given the people there. God is coming out. He's coming down. He's going to tread on the earth, and the mountains will just melt. The valleys will split. What an awesome picture of God coming down and what it might be. The power and the might of God comes down on earth to say things aren't right. And all this, when he comes out, is for the transgression of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. Jacob represents Judah, the southern kingdom. And then for Israel, the northern kingdom. God's not happy with either one of them. What's the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? That's their capital city. It's where the leaders go. Okay? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? What was supposed to happen with the king of Israel? When he became king, what was he supposed to get? You know? I believe it was to give him a charge. It was to help his mind stay straight as to what your function is. He was supposed to get a copy of the law. Why, you think? Think it might be important to his leadership? To what his purpose as king is? God wanted him to have... You need to read this. Every day. This needs to be a top thing on your mind. You need to pay attention to what's in this law. Because that's what I expect from you. I expect you to be the leader of my people. Did God want the people to have a king? No, not originally, because this is a monarchy. Okay? God's the leader of this country. But the people wanted to be like the other nations around them, have a king. God relented to say, okay, you have a king, but I want that king to lead my people. Seems like the kings didn't pay a whole, not all of them at least, pay a lot of attention to that law when they had it. But here he comes out and he confronts the people, Samaria standing for the entire nation of Israel, Jerusalem for the entire kingdom of Judah, that there's all kinds of evil among you. In verse 6 he says, therefore I will make Samaria a heap of ruins in the field, places for planting a vineyard. I will pour down her stones into the valley, and I will uncover her foundations. My understanding is that you could go over there now. Samaria was built on a hill and all that. And you could go over there now, even in the archaeological ruins and stuff of that city, and find that there are, in fact, stones and all that rolled down the hills around where Samaria used to be. All her carved images shall be beaten to pieces, and all her pay as a harlot shall be burned with fire. All her idols I will lay desolate, for she has gathered it for the pay of a harlot, and they shall return to the pay of a harlot. Therefore I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like jackals and a mourning like the ostriches, for her wounds are incurable. For it has come to Judah. It has come to the gate of my people, to Jerusalem. That's a pretty serious picture of Micah himself and how hard he's taking it, right? He's going to wail and howl. Go around stripped and naked. That's meant to be, according to most of the commentators I read, a representation of what's going to happen to the people as they're captured and led astray, led out from their land. They're going to go, that was pretty common when people captured a people, as that they basically humiliated and demoralized the people and stuff and take them away. And so Micah would imitate that at some point, for going wailing like jackals and a mourning like ostriches, making all kinds of sounds and moans of all the pain that's there, because you can't be cured. You've gone so far into sin, you've gone so far away from your God, not being willing to hear what he has to say, you're just incurable now. Let's go back. I'll have to have this, bring my book up here to help me with this. More, Micah goes back to his book ring and his towns out here, and he actually makes a lot of word plays on the names of the towns in these next verses, and trying to tell the people the things that are going to happen. It says, tell it not in Gath, weep not at all, which is where he's from, down here in Gath. He comes, okay? Get myself lost. In Beth Ophrah, roll yourself in the dust. Now, the town's name apparently meant a dust bowl kind of thing. I don't know if that's on here or not, but Beth Ophrah, no, don't see that one in there. We're rolling in the dust. Pass by in a naked shame, you inhabitant of Shephir. The inhabitant of Zaanan does not go out. Beth Ezel mourns. So Shephir, there's Beth Ezel. I saw that before. It was up Bethlehem, right along. Well, not seeing it now. Okay. For the inhabitant of Meroth, or Beth Ezel mourns, it's a place to stand taken away from you. For the inhabitant of Meroth pined for good, but disaster came down from the Lord. To the gate of Jerusalem, O inhabitant of Lachish, harness the chariot to the swift steeds. She was the beginning of sin to the daughter of Zion, for the transgressions of Israel were found in you. Therefore you shall give presents to Moresheth-Gath. The houses of Achzib shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. I will yet bring an heir to you, O inhabitant of Marishah. The glory of Israel shall come to Adullam. Make yourself bald and cut off your hair because of your precious children. Enlarge your baldness like an eagle, for they shall go from you into captivity. So there's Adullam down here, Beth Shemesh. Basically, all the towns he's mentioning are all these down here in the southeastern plain, a place just southeast of Jerusalem. I think I said southwest before, didn't I? Messed that up. But southeast of Jerusalem is where Gath is. But he's referring to all these towns down here and using them as a word picture, trying to give the people. Yeah, one commentator laid it out really well, I think, in his going through, and he took each one of them. He says, in Gath, tell it not, that's a tell town, he says, and it lives on a hill. In Akko, it's weep. They had the town, their name meant weeping, so don't weep. In Beth Ephrah, dust town, roll yourself in dust. Shafir, town means fair, but he talks about going away and nakedness and shame, so not very fair there, why? In the towns of Zaanan, it's a march town. You'll be marched out from there. Beth Ezel is a neighborhood town. He's going to take you from your standing place. So you're not going to be neighbors anymore. You're going to be taken away. Inhabitants of Maroth, a bitter town, that's where your travail. They talk about good, but it's not so good. Because of evil, come down from Jehovah to the gate of Jerusalem. Lachish is known for horses, a horse town. But you're going to be, the horses are going to be strapped with a chariot for the people coming in to take you over. Okay. From Zion, talks about Zion, their farewell. Moresheth-Gath is a possession of Gath. Gath's not going to be possessed by the people that own it now. It's not going to be their inheritance. It's going to be given away. Achzib is a false spring. They're going to go to Osbig. Well, you're not going to be getting water, although that's the name of the town. You're not. It's going to be a disappointing book. No water there. I'll bring the heir, okay? This is Sargon of Assyria that came in at the time to afflict Judah. And thou citizen of Marishah. Marishah means it's an heir town. Town passed on. It won't be passed on. It's going to be captured by the invading enemy. Adullam is a wild beast cave. Okay? It's going to be the glory of Israel Lachem. Does that name ring a bell to you for anything else? Familiar Bible stories, probably, if you remember. Second king of Israel was David. You probably heard him before, huh? What did David have to do from the first king of Israel, Saul?
Hide in the cave.
He had to hide. He had to run for some number of months and possibly a couple of years, because Saul was so jealous. So upset with the success that David had, that Saul no longer had as much success. So David ran. Well, the caves that he ran to and hid were around this Adullam down here. That's where David spent a lot of that time when he was running from Saul, in the caves and stuff. So apparently that's up in the hills around Jerusalem, and all kinds of different caves to move around to. And that's where Micah refers to that area. Around that. So he's using a word picture of all those towns down the country that he's used to, and Moresheth-Gath, and using that as a picture, basically here's the name, the way you named your town, well, it's not going to be that way. This other stuff's going to happen because you're going to fall. In chapter 2, he starts out with, woe to those who devise iniquity and work out evil on their beds. At morning light, they practice it because it's in the power of their hand. What's that telling us? You ever predisposed doing evil to somebody? You pondered it. Picture here, it sounds like upon their beds while they're just waiting to go to sleep. Man, I just wonder how I could get back at somebody. Huh? How badly can I treat them? And then in the morning it says they get up and go do it. Okay? Because it's in the power of their hands. They covet fields and they take them by violence. Also houses and seize them. They oppress a man in his house, a man in his inheritance. How's that fit with what God told the people to do? Is that legal in the land of Israel? No. Okay? You remember a story, okay, about Ahab, one of the wicked kings in Israel at least, wanted somebody's grape field, right? Guy refused to give it to him. And the king went back home and mourned and all that stuff. And so Jezebel, his wife, comes in. Oh, man, you're the king. Come on, now, you can do anything. You're the king. What is this? And she got people to go out and, you know, they basically murdered, you know. Well, one of the reasons he didn't want to give it up because that was his inheritance. Right? It was illegal in Israel to sell your inheritance. It belonged to the family. It belonged to the tribe. Okay? You can't give away your inheritance. That's the way God decided it should be split up. And whatever belonged to the tribe of Judah stayed with the tribe of Judah. Whatever belonged to the tribe of, you know, Issachar or whatever, it stayed within the tribe. You didn't go give it away. But these people, present leaders and the rich people in Israel or Judah, didn't care. They're going to go take it away. By violence, it says. So if you don't just give it to us, if you don't agree with us, we'll take it by force. Okay? Shows a lot of respect for what God had to say, huh? Therefore, thus says the Lord. Yeah. Do we ever ponder that? Apparently these folks don't. But when we say things, when we do things, especially even those things we premeditate, we're not really hiding it from God. Even if it, you know, we don't say it, even if it's just right up here between our ears and we're thinking it in preparation before we actually take action, is any of that hidden from the Father? None of it is. He knows it. You know the scriptures that says, you know the words of my mouth before you can speak them, right? So we're not hiding anything we're doing from God and the thoughts of our mind, thoughts of our heart. I sort of begin to wonder with what Micah says here and that thing, you know, that the people of Judah were thinking that they're doing all this stuff, this is what we're going to go do, and it's against what God had in mind and what God's law said. And they were just going about it without even thinking that God knows it. God sees everything you're doing. God knows everything you're thinking. He knows every word from your mouth. And there will be an accounting for all that. Behold, against this family I am devising a disaster from which you cannot remove your necks, nor shall you walk haughtily. For this is an evil time. In that day one shall take up a proverb against you and lament with a bitter lamentation, saying, we are utterly destroyed. He has changed the heritage of my people, how he has removed it from me. To a turncoat he has divided our fields. Therefore you will have no one to determine boundaries by lot in the assembly of the Lord. Do not prattle, you say to those who prophesy, so they shall not prophesy to you. They shall not return insult for insult. Skip two pages instead of one. You who are named the house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord restricted? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him who walks uprightly? Lately my people have risen up as an enemy. You pull off the robe with a garment from those who trust you as they pass by, like men returned from war. The women of my people you cast out from their pleasant houses, from their children you have taken away my glory forever. Is that a pretty picture? You've despised my very people. You treat your brothers like they're captives. You're taking away homes from the women and the children. The children are expected to see God living in you, right? But you've taken all my glory away from them forever. Not a very pretty picture, right? But that's God's picture of the people of Israel, of Judah, and the way that they're behaving. You mentioned that Micah was mentioned over here in Jeremiah 26, so that's a lot of the whole chapter is pretty good for it. So the priests and the prophets, this is verse 7, heard all of Jeremiah speaking the words in the house of the Lord. Now it happened when Jeremiah had made an end of speaking all that the Lord had commanded him to speak to all the people, that the priests and the prophets and the people seized him, saying, "You will surely die. Why have you prophesied in the name of the Lord, saying, 'This house shall be divided, shall be like Shiloh, and the city shall be desolate, without an inhabitant?'" And all the people were gathered against Jeremiah in the house of the Lord. When the princes of Judah had heard these things, they came up from the king's house to the house of the Lord and sat down in the entry of the new gate of the Lord's house. And the priests and the prophets spoke to the princes and all the people, saying, "This man deserves to die, for he has prophesied against this city, as you have heard with your own ears." Not well accepting what God said, right? The prophet speaking right from God's desires, right from God's command to them. And the people are saying that they deserve to die. Then Jeremiah spoke to all the princes and the people, saying, "The Lord sent me to prophesy against this house and against this city with all the words that you have heard. Now therefore amend your ways and your doings and obey the voice of the Lord your God. Then the Lord will relent from concerning the doom that he has promised against you. As for me, here I am in your hand. Do with me as seems good and proper to you. But know for certain that if you put me to death, you will surely bring innocent blood on yourself, on this city, and on its inhabitants. For truly the Lord has sent me to you to speak all these words in your hearing." So he came out very clearly telling the people, "Hey, I'm here. You can do with me as you want because you've got me captive. But you need to realize that God sent me to tell you this." The same words that Micah would have spoken, okay? So the princes and all the people said to the priests and the prophets, "This man does not deserve to die, for he has spoken to us in the name of the Lord." Okay? There and then certain of the elders of the land rose up and spoke to all the assembly of the people, saying, "Micah of Moresheth prophesied in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, and spoke to all the people of Judah, saying, 'Thus says the Lord of hosts, Zion shall be plowed like a field, Jerusalem shall become a heap of ruins, and the mountain of the temple like bare hills of the forest.' Did Hezekiah, king of Judah, and all Judah ever put him to death? Did he not fear the Lord and seek the Lord's favor? And the Lord relented concerning the doom which he had pronounced against him. But we are doing great evil against ourselves." The people there Jeremiah is speaking to are trying to wrestle with themselves. There appear to be some among the leaders of Israel who are trying to bring them to realize that, hey, this guy, we may not like what he's saying, but he's telling us things that God sent him to say. So we don't need to kill him. We need to listen. And he uses Micah of Moresheth, or actually, I guess King Hezekiah will say, as an example, because Micah preached to him what God had to say. And Hezekiah didn't say, the answer is get rid of Micah. Hezekiah said, "Man, God's telling me this through him? We must really be messed up. Let's turn around and listen to what God has to say. Let's correct our behavior, change our lifestyles, and what we need to do, the way we interact with each other, and then we'll be okay." Did that happen? Yeah, it did. Judah changed a lot under Hezekiah. When Hezekiah expired, when his life was done, kings after him didn't follow that path again. Now it goes back to the same stuff. "Man, I told you guys to get straight. I told you what was expected. And now you walked away from me again." So Judah eventually suffers the capture by Babylon and destruction of the city of Jerusalem by Babylon instead of Assyria. But Hezekiah took time to listen instead of saying, "You're just telling me a bunch of ugly stuff. I don't like what you're saying. I'm not going to listen to that. Let's just get rid of the prophet." So Micah was willing to speak up when things weren't easy, right? When people don't, I guess we could ask us, how do we react when people don't like what we say? When people don't like the way we live? Because in my opinion, a lot of that is they don't want to hear about God. And actually, the way we live, if you're living in accordance with God's word, it brings conviction on them that their lives aren't that way. And they don't like that conviction. So I'd rather get rid of you than have to deal with myself. But it's easier when people start getting all over you, especially when they talk about killing you. It's easier to just say, okay, I'll do it your way, right? Instead of standing firm where we are and standing straight for God, we break and we give up. But Micah didn't do that. Micah stood firm, and at least we have one case where Hezekiah listened, and it was good and beneficial for the land of Judah. In verse 10 of chapter 2 of Micah, he says, "Arise and depart, for this is not your rest. Because it is defiled, it shall destroy, yes, with utter destruction. If a man should walk in a false spirit and speak a lie, saying, I will prophesy to you of wine and drink, even he would be the prattler for this people. I will surely assemble all of you, O Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like sheep of the fold, like a flock in the midst of your pasture. They shall make a loud noise because of so many people. The one who breaks open will come up before them. They will break out, pass through the gate, and go out. The king will pass before them with the Lord at their head." Is he giving them any hope? There's going to be utter destruction, right? The prophet who, interesting to say, a prophet who prophesied to you of wine and drink would be the prouder for the, he'd be the one that you want, right? Interesting picture, huh? I'd rather have wine and drink than I would have the truth given to me. So, but then he comes in verse 12 and 13, and it's really a messianic kind of picture. I'm going to eventually bring you all back. I'm going to assemble Jacob and Israel, both separate kingdoms right now, but God's going to bring them together into one. Okay? I'll put them together and like sheep in a fold, like one. Okay? I'm going to give you pasture. They'll make a loud noise because of the number of the people. And it doesn't say that here, but my picture, they will make a loud noise because they're in praise to God. The one who breaks open will come before them, and that's breaker. Every commentary I went to spoke of that. The breaker, the one who's coming to break open, is the Messiah. That's who's coming. He's going to break out. He's going to pass through the gate. And that's their king. He will pass at their head. The future says, hey, I'm going to bring you back together. Judah and Israel basically is my people. And your king will be the one who will lead you out. But again, if you're not paying attention to God's law, then you're probably not going to recognize that Messiah when he comes. Right? To recognize the Messiah, you've got to be attentive to what God's doing, to what God has to say, and the pictures he gave in his word of that Messiah. And then when the Messiah shows, you can say, ah, now I see him. That's the king that's supposed to lead us out. He'd bring us all back together, Israel and Judah under one kingdom, and will lead us in the way, lead us in the path we should walk, we should go. So Micah goes through, there'll be a couple other messianic passages in here. Another one coming up in chapter 3. But that's one of the greatest advantages, some of the commentators said, Micah has for us, is his messianic passages. He's giving the people a hope that there is a hope of the future if you care, if you'll pay attention. So since the bell already rung, we'll end with a news article. There was a gentleman, a black gentleman and stuff, who was wrongfully imprisoned for 24 years, but he was exonerated in 2019 when a judge found that a key witness in the case had entirely made up her testimony. Is that injustice? Yep. It's happened more times than we can count in our country. In very similar situations even, right? But this is right here in our backyard. This is a guy in North Carolina. Okay? 24 years in prison for something he didn't do. And he just got where this came out. Governor Roy Cooper announced Sharp's pardon after he carefully reviewed the case. Mr. Sharp and others who have been wrongfully convicted deserve to have that injustice fully and publicly acknowledged. So we read about Micah and the injustices in the land of Jacob, land of Judah. And then he says words similar to that for Israel. We're not free and clean right here in North Carolina today. There's injustices all around us, right? How does that prick us? How does that touch us? Injustice is not consistent with God's heart. Injustice isn't what God called us to do, to be, other than to bring it to light, right? God would call us to be people who would speak out against that injustice and say, that's not okay. I can't live with that. And he wants us to be building this, to be different. To bring that to light and say, as a holy people, I can't accept that. I refuse to accept it. I refuse to sit back and do nothing when there is in fact something I can do to make a difference. Right? So I encourage us as we go out this week to be a people of God who's willing to be different. A people who are willing to say that the ways of God are true. The ways of God are right. The ways of God are the way that I walk. And therefore I will stand against ugliness and injustice in my world. Van, would you mind leading us in prayer before we finish?